Your health is supported by UNC Health Sciences Library and NC Health Info, working together to connect people everywhere with knowledge to improve health. Visit nchealthinfo.org for answers you can trust.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, a presentation of 97.9 The Hill and UNC Family Medicine. And now, more of Your Health.
Welcome back. You're listening to Your Health, and we're talking with Dr. Mary Ellen Wells, Director and Associate Professor of Neurodiagnostic and Sleep Science in UNC's Department of Allied Health Sciences. And before the break, we had talked a little bit about sleep across the lifespan and some of the consequences if you don't get enough sleep at different ages. And I'm wondering, as we move into this next segment, if we should talk a little bit about what happens when sleep doesn't occur, and what might be some disorders of sleep that people might be thinking about or worried about? Top three, maybe?
Insomnia is the number one sleep disorder. Many people might think it's sleep apnea, but it's actually insomnia is the number one. And with insomnia, that's lack of sleep or not getting the full amount of sleep at night. And that comes in many forms. There are many, many, many things that cause insomnia, and that's where it gets complicated with trying to treat insomnia, is to try to figure out what is it that's causing the issue. Is it the person has somehow formed a negative association with their bedroom? That can happen. Perhaps it's clock watching or different things like that that can cause a person to be dealing with insomnia. And the second is going to be sleep disordered breathing, aka sleep apnea. And there are a couple of different types of sleep apnea. There's obstructive sleep apnea, where the airway basically collapses during the night. It can happen many, many, many times during every hour of sleep, and then your breathing pauses. So basically, you're stopping breathing during the night. And imagine what that's doing to our body, the consequences of our oxygen levels, the consequences on the stress on our heart and our blood vessels, and the stress on our brain. And really, sleep is a function of the brain, and that baffles a lot of people when they hear that, is that it truly is a function of the brain. Sleep apnea is certainly a silent killer. And many people don't realize they have sleep apnea, and they may not know until their bed partner is telling them you need to go to see the doctor, because they see them gasping during the night. And the person has no idea that that's happening to them, because even though they're awaking during the night, it's not enough for them to be conscious of what's happening.
But they're tired in the morning.
Yeah, absolutely. And so consequences of sleep apnea during the day, it, you know, appears that they're fatigued and they're not feeling well, and a whole host of other diseases and disorders are associated with people that have sleep apnea, such as diabetes and obesity and heart disease.
And do you see snoring?
Often, yes. Snoring by itself doesn't necessarily mean that they have sleep apnea, but mostly people who have sleep apnea do snore.
Let's deal with insomnia, because as a primary care physician, I think you just described at least half my patients between insomnia and obstructive sleep apnea. And the pathways are different. Like, obstructive sleep apnea, in some respects, is an easier pathway as a primary care physician. You know, if you are overweight and you snore and you've got a elevated blood pressure, I can almost guarantee you got obstructive sleep apnea. And I know I can get a sleep study, but they're expensive. I know I can get you in perhaps to see someone who can titrate a machine to help you, but those are expensive. And so if you got good insurance and time's not an issue, we can do it. And that's the easier pathway. The harder one is actually the insomnia pathway. And that's because I get a call like I did today already from a patient saying, you know, I haven't slept in 2 weeks. I need Ambien. And if I don't get it, I'm going to go to the emergency room so they'll admit me so I can sleep for a couple days. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. First off, we got to talk about it. But yet, that's, again, a much more difficult in many respects, because it's not just Ambien or nothing. There's got to be everything in between.
That's absolutely correct. And sleeping medications, that's another complicated topic. And there are other ways. And one in particular is cognitive behavioral therapy. And that is a key treatment for insomnia that's very beneficial for many, many people. And that's something that physicians can do, not just a sleep doctor.
When might you think about making that recommendation to a patient with insomnia?
For the cognitive behavioral
the CBT,
therapy?
Yes.
Well, at any point. I mean, that's something that could be beneficial early on, you know, as soon as you see those types of issues.
So when we think about people who develop insomnia, who perhaps didn't have it before, to what extent is there some mental health stressor going on? And do we deal with that appropriately?
That's the complicated piece, is trying to understand where the sleep disorder comes into play. Is it the sleep disorder that's underlying this, or is it the mental health condition that's underlying this? Sleep issues and depression are certainly related, and there's much research out there that does link everything together. And so that's really key when trying to figure out which piece and how we need to go about treating that person.
So somebody comes in with that concern. How is it broken down? Where do you begin?
Yeah, I would love to hear your thoughts. You know, I have 15 minutes. These are small amounts of time to come up with a plan and implement the plan.
That's right. And there are sleep behavioral therapists, and that is certainly somewhere that a person can be referred to that would have the amount of time to really go through, because it does take a lot of questions with the patient to really understand what is going on with their lives to try to help them. So the behavioral sleep medicine therapist, those are people who can certainly help with that. Because yes, I mean, you know, jumping to the medication right in the beginning has all sorts of other effects that go along with it. So that wouldn't probably be the best place to start.
It just seems that while we know medicine can be very helpful for some in some situations, given the complexities of sleep that you've mentioned and the lifespan issues as the landscape of sleep changes as we age, it seems like that more comprehensive approach would be a healthier strategy in terms of trying to figure out whether medication or CBT or some other strategy might be right for an individual.
That's correct, because sleep medications, typically you wouldn't want to use long term. So you really need to figure out what's underlying to come up with a good long term solution.
Let's talk in our last minute or two about the 2, 1, 3 areas that you're really focusing time, effort. You say 5 years from now, these would have been great 5 years if our research can do what?
Well, a couple of the studies that we have going on right now, we have a study that is looking at children with Down syndrome and their caregivers. And a lot of attention is not typically given to the caregiver, and that's really important. And that's not only for children with Down syndrome, that's for any caregiver of any child. And that's something that's really important to try to work with, is because if a parent isn't sleeping well, they can't parent well at all. So that's one of the key pieces. And then another key piece is sleep in women. And as a mother myself, we have a very strong at UNC group working with postpartum women. And sleep is a huge issue, postpartum sleep. And just like with the caregivers, if a mother cannot sleep well, then her infant is going to suffer. And so that's another really important piece that we're working on.
Adam, I got one more question.
Okay. You get to close this down.
One more question.
Naps?
Yes. Dr. Wells, tell us about the benefits and the detriments or the issues around naps. I love a good nap.
I like the thought of a good nap, but I never would do.
So the long and the short is, naps can be beneficial and they can also be harmful. As I said before, we cycle through multiple stages of sleep at night, and we don't enter our first pattern of REM until about 90 minutes into sleep. So if you're going to nap, then keep it short. Because if you start to really cycle through, that's going to interrupt your pattern overnight.
Short as 20 minutes, 30 minutes?
You want to keep it under an hour. So gotcha. 20 minute, 30 minute, a shorter nap. The other piece is timing. With our circadian rhythm, which is driven by sunlight, And it goes up and down, and we have peaks and we have troughs. And one of our troughs is right after lunch. You get that sleepy feeling coming over, and that's one of the lows of our circadian rhythm. And we also have the other low at night when we're sleeping. And so with that said, taking a nap later in the afternoon after lunch, that is a timing problem. So that can also affect our sleep at night. And then, so if you're going to nap, keeping it short and then having it early in the day would be the best way to handle a nap. Any napping later on, then your nighttime sleep is going to suffer and you're going to have trouble going to sleep. And then that comes with another host of issues with sitting in the bed and clock watching. And all of those are contributors to insomnia in the long run.
I think the ideas that we've been talking about today are really important to our listeners. And on behalf of your health, I want to thank you for coming in, Dr. Mary Ellen Wells, to share your expertise, enthusiasm, research, and guidance.
Thank you for having me.
We've been talking with Dr. Mary Ellen Wells, Director and Associate Professor of Neurodiagnostics and Sleep Science at the University of North Carolina's Department of Allied Health Sciences, about all things sleepy and awake. We're going to take a short break, and when we return, we'll be talking about your health questions and concerns. You're listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein, Dr. Steve Hooper. Stay with us.